This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
I'm so jacked up just thinking about this match, and I'm standing and pacing in my bed.
He's just Mikazi now.
He's not a kid anymore.
He's a boy. He's a man.
He's a man. He got PWS Superstar Brian Buck. And he was gone in 2 minutes.
So it's Ingobernables.
Ingobernables. Ingobernables.
And nothing about. Look at that knee falling down. He's back. A man of a thousand holes.
You're missing a B there, but that's okay.
There's a B? This is what I'm talking about. These letters don't go together.
We got the Thunder World Champion.
Are you having a wank, are you? And it's like, no.
Merry, 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 Mickey, Mickey, Mickey. Pishy, pishy.
You're listening to the Voices of Wrestling podcast with your hosts, Joe Lanza.
X out, go listen to some boring podcast where they're afraid of their own shadow. Okay? Don't listen to Joe Lanza, because Joe Lanza's not changing.
And Rich Cranch.
Give me a name. Who delivers this guy in a big spot?
Joe, don't yell at me.
In the big spot, who delivers better than this guy?
Stop yelling at me. I agree.
This episode of Voices of Wrestling is sponsored by Casper Mattress. Rich, you can save $50 on your Casper purchase using the promo code VOW at Casper.com. Is it slash or backslash? That's another one I can never get right.
I go slash. I think people used to say backslash, but now I think everybody kind of knows, unless you're coding or doing like programming. So I'm gonna go slash. But you know, backslash if you're specific. If you're a coder and you're like, you need to tell me which one, we'll go with backslash. How about backslash?
So that's promo code VOW at Casper.com / VOW to save $50 on your next match.
Not bad.
$50, Rich.
That's some nice bones right there. That'll work.
And check it out. Completely risk free. Casper offers free delivery and free returns. After a 100-night home trial, 100-night, Rich, if you don't love this mattress after 100 nights, they'll pick it up and they'll refund you every penny. How about that?
That's not bad.
Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, so take advantage of this guarantee. For your 100-night free trial, go to casper.com/VOW and use the promo code VOW today.
All right, TakeOver, you want to move to WWE land?
We're going to do the... All right, let's do that, and then if we got time at the end, we'll do the TNA.
Okay, yeah. Because I do want to talk TNA, because TNA had just an incredible week, but people will grill us if we don't talk TakeOver or Money in the Bank, so we got to
do it.
All right, TakeOver the end. What were your thoughts overall before we get match by match?
I think I liked the show better than anybody else did. I mean...
I think you did. I really think you did.
I thought it was a pretty
good
show.
No, I didn't mind it. I don't know if great, but... People are grilling this show. People are really down on the show. When I was done, I kind of said, okay, you know, good, not great, but not like the level. People were really down on this, and I don't know. Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that.
Well, okay, there's a lot going on here. First of all of the takeovers are always so great. So there's high bars to clear. That's number one. It wasn't better than Dallas. But I do think in a vacuum, this was a great show because nothing on the show was bad. Everything was really good. But there's a couple other things going on. I think there's a lot of confirmation bias because it's really become a thing to pick on Finn Balor lately. So I think a lot of people came into that match ready not to like it, fully prepared not to like it, because it was Finn Balor and it was a lot working against it. It was a cage match. It was Finn Balor. It was a feud that never seems to end. A feud that I really like, though. So again, I'm going against the grain there too. I think it was one of the better feuds this year. I thought it was a nice, logical story, a good 8-month feud with good matches. No match of the years, but really good matches, all in the 4-star range, including this one. And I think that Austin Aries is another guy, because he's such an asshole, that people sort of have – they come into his matches not wanting to like them. And I don't think the Aries-Nakamura match was like any kind of great match. I thought it was a very good match. I thought it was a match that – was better than people were saying that it was.
Yeah, I didn't like it, but we'll get into that.
Yeah,
I had nothing there. I had so was nothing.
We can,
but we'll get
yeah, we can debate that. But I mean, there. So I think the show had a lot working against it from a lot of different standpoints. But by the end of the show, you know, when I flipped off my award-winning WWE Network, I thought that I saw another pretty great takeover show. I don't know.
Absolutely. Let's break down the card here a little bit. So we had the former La Sombra, Cien Almas, making his debut, defeating Ty Dillinger. What did you think of this guy?
I thought it was exactly what it should have been. I think that a lot of the talk coming out of it was that Dillinger looked like more of a star. I think that's going to happen since he was sort of a cult favorite in that building. Here's the problem with him now. He's the guy that you want to use in these spots because he's such a good worker and you want him to walk guys through these matches and carry dudes that are new and nervous or whatever. The problem is he's almost too over for that role now. You almost need like a CJ Parker back who nobody cared about.
Well, because this was a match where by the end people were into Dillinger winning. And it's like, no, you're supposed to like this guy. Like you could hear Dillinger trying to say, no, please, no, this guy. Like, that's the one you want to cheer for, not me. Like, so but they were into
him. He's sort of grown out of the role in that respect. He's too over for the role. Is the problem. He's too over for the role. So, like, you know, before him it was CJ Parker and he wasn't over. So it was perfect. And Juice Robinson takes all those great bumps and is a great seller and all those things. So he worked in that role too. Dillinger is too over for the role. And the other thing working against La Sombra, the suspenders have to go.
What about the hats? You like the feather in the hat?
That his look is horrible. He looked
the dollar store like Armando Estrada.
It's just goofy, and you know
he's also got to be a heel too. He's a terror. Like I think he's got to be a heel.
And people are like, oh, he wore the suspenders in Mexico. Well, if they it sucked there too, it never looked good. I mean, that's not you're not defending it very well.
Yeah, I just think he's got to be a heel. I think he's gonna be so much better when they do that because he seems like a very uncomfortable babyface right now.
I think they're wrapped up in the fact that he's kind of good looking, so they think, all right, well, he's good looking and he does flips, so he has to be a babyface. I think you're right. I do kind of think he'd be a better heel. I also agree with the Dave Meltzer theory that he would have been better off with the mask. I don't know. He sort of came off better to me with the mask. I agree with Dave on that one. Not that that I don't think he can't be a star without it. But, you know, we were hearing whispers that he was having a lot of trouble acclimating when he got down there to NXT. He's having a lot of trouble with the English, from what I understand. So there are some things working against him. And those fucking suspenders, I can't get off of that. They have to go. It's bad. It's a prelim level look. It's like this isn't 1983 and you're not in the Fabulous Ones. The suspenders have to go. You're not El Dandy. Okay.
Well, nobody wears suspenders anymore. It's like, what are you doing? Like, that's like nobody wears suspenders anymore.
It's just bad. And it's just bad. Yeah, sometimes little things like that matter. And I really am bothered a lot by these suspenders.
I mean, it didn't bother me that much, but I think he's destined to be. I think they're going to try the face thing for a while. This is similar to what happened in Mexico, too. Didn't they try the face thing forever and then just said, all right, this isn't working, and then turn him a heel, and it was a megastar. Like, I think that's probably what's going to happen here as well. They're just going to try him at a face, and it's never going to click, and he's going to be a heel, and then he's going to get over immediately. But I thought this was solid. This was okay, but yeah, there's a little uneasiness there with him. He's got a little work to do. But hey, he's in the developmental brand, so it's a good place to be. So,
you think does anyone stand out to you in NXT who can kind of take over that Ty Dillinger role, who can be a good guy to work with? I mean
other than like the Garganos and like those guys, like maybe that's their long-term role, like a Ciampa does that, but I think he's almost a little bit better than that too. Like,
you know what, Gargano would almost be perfect because they're never pushing him. He's never getting a serious push because he's like 5'6", let's be honest,
right?
And and he's just a small framed guy, you know what I mean? But he's an excellent worker. And but again, will he get over too much and outgrow the role as well? I mean, that's a possibility with him too. CJ Parker was never getting over.
They don't have a whole lot of guys. I'm just kind of going through the roster right now in my head, and then I'm loading up the Wikipedia now. They don't really have anybody on the roster right now that I'd say could fit that role, which is not good.
You know what you got to do? You got to strip Dillinger of his gimmick. But at the same time, now that's not really fair to him.
Yeah, why don't you do that thing? Do it for a few months. Let him do this thing for a few months, and then maybe then. But yeah, that's not fair to him.
From his perspective, he's like, fuck, man. Because I thought, first of all, that is a horrible gimmick, but he got it over. That was a horrendous gimmick. This Perfect 10 thing stinks. But he got it over to his credit. So you know what? Maybe he does deserve a push. And Triple H did hint at that. Maybe he's a guy. I feel like he would die on the main roster. I don't have a reason.
Oh, that's a small room gimmick for sure.
My gut is telling me he would die on the main roster.
No, that's a small room.
I don't think he would stand out on the main roster. I do think you could push him at the NXT level. Mm-hmm. It's really not fair to him just because he got it over, but I don't know. They need someone else.
Zack Ryder, I guess, would be your default.
There's a good
there,
one. But the thing is he going to be happy doing that? I mean, that's like,
no, the answer
he's
is
basically
absolutely not.
Been doing that on the main roster. Now you're going to ask him to do it in developmental.
Yeah, I think I'm guessing the answer would be no, he is not going to be happy.
You need NXT.
You'll get a lot of subtweets from old Zach.
Yeah.
If you do that. So
I mean, NXT needs a Heath Slater, and they had one in Dillinger, but he outgrew the role. Yeah. He's too over for the role. It's crazy.
All right, so I move on. The NXT Tag Team Championship, The Revival, defeating and winning the titles back. They defeated, of course, American Alpha, Jason Jordan, Chad Gable. This was my favorite match on the entire show. I thought this was spectacular. I thought this was every bit as good as the one in Dallas. And I don't know what your thoughts are. I loved it. I thought these guys are just the chemistry these guys have, and just this is a clash that, you know what I mean? Like, I was done with this, and I said that could have fit. You could have taken this match and plopped it on any old Clash of the Champions or whatever, and it would have been just, you know what I mean? Like, it fit that so perfectly. These guys are just great.
That's what I've been saying. They remind me of the Fantastics and the Rock and Roll.
This could be on Clash 3. Like, this could be on Clash of the Champions 3, and I wouldn't change a thing. Like, it would be the exact same match. Because these guys don't do a lot. Like, they're not jumping all over the place. Gable and Jordan, I mean, Jordan does the drop kick. I mean, that's his big fucking move, is a drop. Like, that's the part that I love about it, is that these guys they don't do silly stuff. When Gable and Jordan have an opening, they play to the crowd, they do that sort of stuff. They don't do a bunch of dives over the top, and so it's cool to sort of see that. And of course, I'm not a guy, oh, I hate the flips, or I love that stuff, but I like that they're kind of a throwback. Like, you could literally take this entire match, throw it on Clash of the Champions 4 or whatever, and it would fit right in. Like, that's I think really, really awesome of these guys, that they can do that and get it over as much as it's getting over. So kudos to them. I thought this was great.
Yeah, I tweeted similar thoughts. It reminded me of those old Midnight Express Fantastics matches, Rock and Roll Express, and you're right. That's exactly what these matches are like. In real time, this was my favorite match on the show too, and in real time, I tweeted that it was one of the best tag team matches I've ever seen. That's how excited I was watching this match live and in real time. In watching it a second time to review it for Fighting Spirit magazine, on sale now on newsstands in Europe or online via the Fighting Spirit magazine app, little plug there, where you can read all of my reviews. In watching it a second time for that review, I kind of backed off that a little bit. I don't think it was one of the best tag team matches I've ever seen, but I do think it was a great match. I think it was the best match on this show, every bit as good as the previous match they had. And I just love these matches, and the two teams play their roles so well, and they have such good chemistry together. And the American Alpha team, their babyface spots just fire me up. You know, it's just something about the way that they work. They have great chemistry among themselves as a team and with these particular opponents. I think to some extent, you know, I know people talk about the Revival. I want to see the Revival work against some other teams and have matches of this quality. I think American Alpha are the ingredient that puts these matches over the top. And that's probably going to annoy people.
No, I agree. And that's
Stop
not, I don't think that's a slight.
Stop agreeing with me, Craig.
Sorry, I don't think that's a slight on the Revival. I think they're awesome. But yeah, I think American Alpha is so much the... the uber baby faces that make everything. I'm sorry. I'm with you. I like the Revival. I think they could fit. I think you can slot them into the main roster or whatever, and they can just be there. Like, they can be there for 5 years. You know what I mean? They don't really do a whole lot. They're just kind of like chilling. Like, that's fine. But American Alpha, that's the team that you build. I mean, those are the stars of that division in these matches. I agree.
I like the Revival too. And it's not that I don't like them, but for a team that prides themselves on being minimalist, they're a little sloppy. I don't know if you agree or if you've noticed that, but some of the stuff they do is a little sloppy. But again, I like them. I think they're an excellent team. I think these are the two best tag teams in the world right now. And if I had to vote right now, they'd be my number one and my number two. I'd probably go American Alpha 1, Revival 2. And so it's not as if, but you know, it's a minor critique. But I'm curious to see the Revival work against other teams. I know American Alpha is going to have great matches against whoever they work with. I'm not so convinced with the Revival. I'm not as convinced. Maybe I should phrase it that way. But yeah, I did think it was the best match on the show. And I'm sad that they're sort of splitting them up, as we saw whatever that other team is calling themselves, Attack American Alpha, in the post-match. And Paul Ellering come out on the stage. I think they were chanting, "Who are you?" at the two big guys. I don't think they were chanting that at Paul Ellering.
Yes. Yeah, we should talk about the Authors of Pain thing. I thought the same thing as well. Not that I think that a lot of those people really know who Paul Ellering was, but there were probably, you get that same thing. You've been to wrestling shows, you know, there was probably the muttering of somebody saying, "Hey, who was that?" And then, like, you know, if five people know who it is, the word spreads quickly. You know what I mean? That's Paul Ellering. Yeah, Legion of Doom guy. Oh, yeah, Paul Ellering. Oh, he used to manage Legion of Doom. People know that. Those Authors of Pain guys came out. Nobody has any fucking clue who those guys are. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm with you. I think that's it, because I think that word spreads quickly and people probably knew eventually that was Paul Ellering. I'm with you. I think they were chanting it at the crowd.
Here's the thing, though. I think people just like bashing the Full Sail crowd and took that as an opportunity to do so again. I don't expect a random 27-year-old fan to know who Paul Ellering is anyway.
How would you know?
He hasn't been on TV in like 12 years. He doesn't. He's aged, obviously.
12? It might be even more than that.
It's been forever since that guy's been on TV.
Because it was that new – because he came for that new LOD, and then I think he did something with the Disciples of Apocalypse or whatever. But when was that? Like, yeah, 98 was, I think, the last time he was around.
I can't take a 25-year-old fan to task for not knowing who that is in the moment live as he comes out on the stage.
Yeah, so we're talking almost 20 years since last time.
Listen, it took me a second to recognize him. I didn't instantly recognize him. Can we take it easy with Paul? It's not Ric Flair. Okay, it's Paul Ellering. Okay, I get it. Okay, but it's not Ric Flair. It's not Hulk Hogan. Okay,
I have a buddy at work, and he hadn't watched TakeOver or whatever. So I walked up to his desk, and this is a guy he's trained as a wrestler. He's wrestled. He's done stuff. He's a huge wrestling fan. You know, and I went up to him. And I said, "You will never guess who came back, you know, yesterday at TakeOver or whatever." And he guessed, you know, three people. I don't know, whatever. And this guy, he's deep. He knows his stuff. Like, so I said, okay, well, he was a manager of tag teams or whatever. That's what I gave him. Still didn't get it. I said, like 80s. Still didn't get it. And then finally he looked at me and goes, "Paul Ellering?" And I went, "Yeah." And he goes, "Oh, really?" That's his reaction.
Yeah.
And that's a hardcore fan of like, "Oh, huh, okay." Like, because I said you were never going to guess in a million years. And he goes, "Oh, you're right. I would have never guessed that in a million years." Like, it's Paul Ellering.
I mean,
like,
the instant Twitter reaction to people thinking that they were chanting, "Who are you?" at Paul Ellering. Like, Paul Ellering is some kind of icon of the fucking industry. He's not, by the way. And hasn't been on TV in like a decade and a half. And when he was on TV a decade and a half ago, it wasn't in a prominent role. And it's like, let's face it, even when he was with the Legion of Doom, it wasn't like he was some kind of imperative part of the act.
No, that 92 Legion, I mean, and you got to think of that. Let's think that all these fans have ever watched is WWF. Like, let's think, okay, yes, they're 35 years old, but all they've watched is WWF. You would really not know much. I mean, Paul Ellering was the guy who had Rocco in 92, and then he came in like very short amount of time, like turned on LOD and like came with the Disciples of Apocalypse and then bounced again after like a few months. Like,
was 24 years ago.
Right. That's, and like, I know that because I'm an idiot. Like, I just know that because I know 1998 WWF like the top of my head.
We're taking 30-year-old people to task for not recognizing a minor WWE character from 24 years ago. I mean, that just reeked of, "We want to pick on Full Sail again because we don't like that they chant." I mean, give me a break. I mean, can we stop? Paul Ellering. It took me a second. And I'm old enough to where I should be taking the task if I don't remember him. And it did take me a second to recognize. He aged, too, on top of it all. And he just did the same routine. He's never like a boisterous manager. He's a guy who just stands there. I don't know. I thought people were very hard on Full Sail for that.
It was
and
weird,
honestly, yeah. And again, I don't even think they were chanting it at him. I really don't. I think they were chanting it at the guys in the ring. So I don't know.
All right. Nakamura Aries. Here's where I think we'll disagree.
Yeah. So you want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
Go first.
All right. So here's what I think about this match. First of all, I thought Austin Aries worked circles around Nakamura in this match.
Yes, I will agree with you on
and,
that.
And you and Aaron Bentley seem to be the only two people who agree with that. And again, I think that a lot has to do with people just don't.
It's a small circle, though. I should preface it's not a very big circle.
It's like a tiny, tiny circle. I think some of it is people want to hate Austin Aries and they want to come into this match and not like him because he's a dick. And he is a dick. So I think
yeah,
there is
I just
some
thought he
that.
Worked it like a Raw. This was a Raw match. This was at like end of the first hour. Maybe it bleeds into the second hour Raw match.
Well, here's the thing. I thought he worked circles around Nakamura. I thought Nakamura – here's Nakamura so far. He had the great match against Zayn, right? Mm-hmm. Because he's a smart guy, and he knew that was a huge spot. It was his first match. It was no matter what anybody tells you, it was the most important match on that show, even though it wasn't the main event. It was in Dallas at WrestleMania weekend, and Nakamura's a smart guy, and he went out there and busted his ass and had a match of the year contender with Sami Zayn. He hasn't done a thing since in this company because he knows he doesn't have to. He's getting by on his charisma, and quite honestly, his promos have been more impressive than his matches. His TV matches, to me, hasn't stood out at all. He hasn't struck me as a superstar in his television matches yet. He strikes me more as a superstar when he does in-ring things, promos, face-offs with opponents, things like that. That's
and
where
maybe,
the charisma comes out.
Maybe hats off to him. Maybe he's being smart there.
No,
maybe he's
and
going,
that's
hey.
My point.
Yeah, I'm not going to kill myself.
Exactly.
All I have to do is make funny faces and people love me and buy my shirt.
But Rich,
cool.
Here's the thing.
Perfect.
That's
yeah.
always been his MO.
Yeah.
That was his MO in New Japan. We've criticized him on this show a million times to where he only shows up in the biggest situations. And whether that's because his body's beat up or he's just a classic smart worker who knows he doesn't have to kick it into full gear for every eight-man tag team match in New Japan or every television match against Alex Riley in NXT or whatever the case. But in this match against Austin Aries, I thought Austin Aries busted his fucking ass and worked so hard in this match. And the problem, the one mistake that Austin Aries made was he went to that reverse chin lock in the middle of the match. That's not what those fans came to see. They came
no,
to see,
they and they turned on it immediately then. Came, and the match never recovered from
they
that.
They came
I don't
to
think.
See a dream match. They yeah. came to see action. And Austin Aries just and he worked a big arena match in front of 450 fans, and he should have known better. But you take that one spot away. That he made one mistake. Otherwise, I thought he worked so hard. And the closing stretch of that match, Austin Aries killed himself. Okay. There was the DVD spot. And then Austin Aries on that tope where he flew and hit that guardrail. And then the way he sold that with his eyes rolling into the back of his head. And then he got back in the ring and he hit the Boumaye, whatever he calls it now. And he got the pin. Man, that was a great performance by Austin Aries. Aside from that one terribly ill-conceived spot, which just sucked the juice out of the match from that point. This is where we're going to disagree because I do think they recovered. And I think the closing stretch was excellent.
Yeah, I think the closing, I didn't like it. I just thought it was too rushed. It just kind of came out of nowhere for me. Yes, you had the DVD or the apron, you know, Death Valley Driver, and that was cool. But it didn't seem like, I felt like that spot just, it existed to, I don't know what the reason, like it, I don't want to say an apron spot doesn't, because people were saying, because I said the match was pedestrian. I said that on Twitter and people were, oh no, there was an apron spot. Oh no, he did a DVD on the apron. But yeah, just because you out of nowhere do an apron spot onto a DVD and then go to the finish, I don't know. Does that really do much for you? For nothing was a connection for me. It seemed like it was super slow. I agree with you that Aries was way better than Nakamura in this, but like I said, it was a small circle. It's just, Aries was working this, like you said, a big arena match, like a house show or whatever you want to call it, and it just didn't react. And then, yeah, you have the DVD spot and people went nuts or whatever, and then you just went right to the finish. I wanted some back and forth. I wanted something, but there just wasn't. Nakamura just went in there, hit his move, and then that was it. Like, I don't know. For me, it just never clicked, and when it was over, it was just like, well, that was that. Whatever.
I picked up on a story that, and I guess you didn't. I thought Aries, first of all, he was working the neck early in the match. And the problem with – because, he was setting up whatever he calls his – the movie day. I'm so bad with the names of the moves. But he worked the neck, and his mistake was working the neck with the reverse chin lock. You can't get away with that in 2016. You have to have a more creative rest hold that looks dangerous. We talk about it all the time. It's a reverse chin lock in this day and age, especially in front of that crowd on this show. That was such a huge mistake on his part to go to that move. You can't do that. He should have used a more creative MMA-inspired – I don't know what move, but maybe a dragon sleeper or something. He should have went with something else to continue working the neck. He also tried working the leg to take away the boumaillé early in the match. Those tactics did not work. Aaron Bentley was very critical of Nakamura for not selling the neck or the knee after after Aries did all that work to work
his really body. He really did.
And it's true that he didn't. So I thought Aries had a plan. I thought Aries worked very hard. I thought Aries was excellent in the with the tope spot where he knocked himself out on it, and the way he sold that and his mannerisms and the way his eyes rolled in the back of his head, and I did like the finish. You know what's interesting? I find this very interesting. In New Japan, Rich, they protect the finisher so well. No one ever kicks out of finishers in New Japan unless it's like the Tokyo Dome main event. What was the only finisher in New Japan that everybody kicked out of?
Yeah, the boumaillé. Yeah.
In WWE, where no finishers are protected, and people kick out of finishers in the second hour of fucking Raw on a regular basis, it's instant death. They completely reversed course on this. That was the one finisher that didn't finish anybody in New Japan. As the Golden State cuts at the 8. Are you watching this?
I'm not. No, I'm doing this stupid thing with you. They were down by like 25. Yeah. I've been following on my phone in case you've been noticing me kind of like
Curry hits a 3 with 9 minutes left and they cut it to 8. So, yeah. But anyway, I just think it's funny that the Kinshasa, whatever he calls it now, is
better say it right or Corey Graves is going to bury you.
Maybe. I don't know. But I'm going to keep saying boumaillé until I figure out how to say it.
That's fine. Boumaillé is a cool.
But so ultra protected in the company where they don't protect finishers, doesn't finish anybody off in the company where finishers are instant death all the time, which I think is funny. But anyway, I liked it. Look, I didn't think it was a match of the year or anything like that, but I think I gave it 3.75 or something like that because I thought if you take away that ill-advised spot, if Austin Aries uses a dragon sleeper instead of a fucking reverse chin lock, I think
looking
at that match in a completely different way. And I also think it doesn't suck the energy out of the crowd. You can't work a slow, methodical match like that in front of that crowd in a building that size. That was a big arena match. Slow, methodical. You know what I mean? That it was the wrong match for that building.
Yeah. Move on. Next match, women's championship. Asuka defeating Nia Jax. I thought this was okay. Not great. Nia Jax is just not good. I'm not gonna get it. I think if this didn't kind of prove to you that she did, the story made sense. Asuka kept trying, all of her little stuff, and Nia Jax kept powering out of it and powering out of it, powering out of it until Asuka eventually, got her. But it's just Nia Jax does such a terrible job of exuding power and exuding dominance and exuding, monster ability that it hurts. It just kind of was Nia Jax on the ground the entire time with Asuka doing moves. And I didn't mind it. It was cool, but Nia Jax does such a terrible job of being a monster that it was hard to really buy into any of her, sort of rising from the ashes to sort of show her power over Asuka, only for Asuka to get right back in the hold or whatever. So that's my one criticism with it, but it was probably better than I thought it was. I thought it was going to be.
I love these Asuka title matches. They're so much different than the previous NXT women's generation matches, which were also great, obviously. These are great in a completely different way. They feel violent. They feel nasty. They feel hard hitting. They have that real, Joshi Aja.
There's an uneasiness when you're watching them.
And, they feel like the old Bull Nakano, Aja Kong style Joshi matches, not the high work rate. It's kind of the same dichotomy, right? Because you have those Minami Toyota style Joshi matches, which were all heavy work rate and heavy action, just like the Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch and Charlotte matches, right? And then you have sort of these other kind of nasty, brutal Joshi matches where the women go in there and just kill each other. And that's what Asuka sort of brought to the table with NXT. And I really like these matches for what they are. I thought this was the best Nia Jax performance. I thought this was better than her Bayley performance. But I agree, she has a long way to go. And I tell you what, I love the finish. I love the finish.
The finish, the story of the match, if you had a real person, if you had Nia Jax really could do this like monster thing and really got that across, this match would have been awesome. But it's just like, I just can't buy into her at all. I just, there's it because it worked. The story was really cool of Asuka just doing whatever she could to ground her, and then the monster just rising and rising and rising and rising until Asuka finally does it. But it's just like, it doesn't work with Nia Jax because she's just not good. Like,
it doesn't seem like she has it in her to work to her gimmick. She should be nasty and violent like Asuka is.
Yeah, she's just not comfortable in her own skin.
She needs to be locked in a room with Bull Nakano tapes and Aja Kong tapes, you know? To learn how to work to her size and bring out that viciousness. And I thought Asuka did a good job trying to bring it out of her. But the finish with Nia Jax, knowing she was finished off and screaming, that primal scream in Asuka's face before Asuka finished her off with that knee strike, I thought that was great. I really thought that was a great finish. That had me fired up. I thought that finish, that one moment, brought the match up a whole nother level. I love stuff like that, Rich. I really do. So so I thought that helped the match a lot. And I really liked it. I like these Asuka matches, and I like the style that she brings to the table.
And then we'll get to the main event, the steel cage. Samoa Joe defeating Finn Balor here. And now I went into this match. You, of course, we previewed it. I went in going, it's a steel cage. I'm not into this feud quite as much as you were. I saw the reaction on Twitter. I watched it a few days after everybody else did. I saw the reaction on Twitter, and everyone was like, it's okay. It just was this. I was expecting, hey, I'm not going to really like this match. There's not going to do a whole lot for me. You know, I haven't really been as into Finn Balor as you have, but I actually enjoyed this. Like, outside of the tropey WWE cage match stuff of, like, people climbing all the time or trying to get out of the doors or whatever, which I think that I just do away with that, please, for God's sakes. But in this case, it kind of worked in this match, and I just thought this was a really good match. I was kind of surprised when I saw as many people down on it as they were, because I thought it was pretty good. Yeah, it wasn't a bloody, brutal cage match, but I thought it told a great story, and I thought it got the job done. Like, yeah, it wasn't an insane back and forth, but I thought if the goal was prove that Samoa Joe is the better man, you did that, and I think you did it well.
First of all, Samoa Joe is great. Samoa Joe...
He was far and away better. Like, you talk about why, like, and that's not a slight on Balor, but I thought Joe was the unquestioned star of this match.
Samoa Joe is just great. It's that simple. He's a great pro wrestler. And the door has to go. You're absolutely right. I don't want escape from the door anymore, ever again. They're not going to do that, unfortunately, but the door really has to go. It adds nothing to these matches. And even from the perspective of, okay, chicken shit heels can win win cheaply through the door, I don't like that style of match anyway. So
no, stupid. Then don't do a cage match.
I don't like that 1979 bullshit where fucking Jack Tatum sneaks out. Not Jack Tatum, John Tatum, you know, sneaks out the door. I don't like that anyway. So the door can go to hell. No more doors.
I like the idea of Jack Tatum would be a damn good pro wrestler.
A good cage match wrestler.
Yeah, hell yeah, he would. Yeah.
If you're going to put a chicken shit heel in a cage, he should just get his ass kicked anyway. I don't know. Just get rid of the door. Joe's great. The door stinks, and this was
good. The door worked in like 1974 when Bruno would beat up some guy and then just walk out of the door to prove that I'm so much better. But that's it.
I think Meltzer made that point too.
Did he?
And that's fine. And I don't just.
But it's over. I mean, it's 2016. We're done.
Like, move on. I mean, enough with the door. But I don't care. This was a good match. Okay, it wasn't a great match, but it was a good match. And if people say it wasn't a good match, they're wrong. I mean, it was a good match. Finn Balor got tossed all over the place. I saw people say, they're just working a normal match. No, they did. What were you watching? Samoa Joe was flinging Balor into this cage left and right, throwing him into the cage, throwing him over the hip, tossing him into the cage. And I think you made first of all, the finish was great. Okay, the Joe hitting his finish off the middle rope was a tremendous finish, not only to the match, but to the feud. And I love that this was a feud where the heel decisively and definitively won the feud with no heel bullshit. How awesome was that? Especially in this company.
Well, I was shocked. I was like stunned because I was like, well, that's it? And then I was kind of like, oh, okay. And then it was like Samoa Joe was just like, yep, I'm better. Like, that's it. Like, I like that. That's cool.
Even the most recent match that Finn Balor beat Joe was kind of fluky, right? Where Joe was surprised that he lost at the end. They told a beautiful 8-month story of one guy turning on his buddy and then definitively defeating him for his title, and then definitively beating him in the feud, and they told the story of just because a guy is a heel, it doesn't mean that he has to change who he is. Joe was an ass kicker as a babyface, and he's an ass kicker as a heel. He doesn't have to cheat. He doesn't need heel authority figures helping him. He's just a fucking ass kicker. And he wins clean anyway. And he was just the better man. And how refreshing is that? And, you know, I say not only in this company, but in wrestling period today. Because we talk about it a million times. All Japan is like the only major company in the world where you get clean main event title matches these days. And it was so nice to get that in this feud, and in the definitive final match of this feud. I loved this. I loved how this feud played out. It didn't have a match of the year contender, but all the matches were very good. And this was a good match too. And I love the finish. I love the booking. And I can't complain at all about this feud or how this match played out.
There you go. So I actually went into it saying, oh man, can't wait to disagree
with
you.
You know why? Because you had all, you read Twitter.
And honestly, I went into it with a little bit of that I wasn't going to like it. And I read the Twitter and all right, cool. They hated it. Everybody hated it. Good. I'm going to hate it. I thought I was going to hate it. Let's see. And I was watching. Oh, wait. No, hold on.
Rich,
I enjoyed this.
I watched it play out in real time, and people were just, they couldn't wait to bash the match. So 3 or 4 minutes into the match, people were already, you know, because it's fashionable to bash Balor. Balor's the guy that people are picking on right now.
And one thing I really liked as well, I thought Graves and Phillips were awesome in here. Graves in particular was so good in this match too. This was a match where it was like just listening to him put these guys over, put over the brutality, put over. He was great in this. He sold this match just as much as those two guys did too. I thought he was really awesome here.
Yeah, I agree. The commentary is always solid on these shows. I think Graves does a real good job.
All right, so that's TakeOver. I want to move to Money in the Bank here. Might have to make this a two-parter. I don't know. A rare, because people say, oh, just make it 4 hours. We can't do that anymore. But we can maybe I'll do a second part if we can get this TNA in here, because we're up against the clock here a little bit. But let's do Money in the Bank, because we definitely have to do that. And if we get time, we'll talk TNA, or we can do a part two.
Yeah, we'll do the 1 to 10s on the Money in the Bank and short thoughts on.
Yeah, I guess I don't really have any super strong thoughts about Money in the Bank, so I guess we can go it pretty quick. I'm not going to do the pre-show. Dolph Ziggler, Baron Corbin, 0. I'm sure you're a 0,
don't
too.
Don't give a single shit.
Apollo Crews, Sheamus, I'm about a 2.
I didn't even know that was a scheduled match.
Yeah, it's
kind of lost. I really don't care about that either. I'd give that a 3.
All right. Charlotte, Dana Brooke versus Natalya and Becky Lynch. I'll be honest. I don't really care. I'm going to go with 3 there as well.
I'm going to go 0. I really don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I couldn't. All right. United States Championship, Rusev, the champion, defending against Titus O'Neil.
I don't know why Titus O'Neil.
Why did Titus get a title?
I said this a couple weeks ago. I don't know why he's in a feud for the United States title against Rusev. The fuck? There's a million better opponents you could have.
Is that a sorry? Like, hey, our bad? Like,
maybe. If it's a one-month diversion for Rusev before he moves on to bigger and better things, I'm fine with it, I guess, because this match is going to have a lot of stuff near the top of the card that's going to be pretty awesome. So you can kind of live with it on this show. But I can't say I'm excited for this. I have to give it like a 2.
Yeah.
Not off to a great start here.
Yeah, this is, I guess we're really excited for Money in the Bank. Make sure you're going to voicewrestling.com for our preview and our review that are coming, because those are going to be great. Fatal 4-Way Tag Match. WWE Tag Team Championships, of course. The New Day, the champions, defending against Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows. Enzo Amore and Big Cass, and of course, the Vaudevillains.
A little more excitement for this. I'm really into the Vaudevillains right now, so I'll give it a 5.
I'm into Enzo and Cass now, because all of my like casual friends are way into Enzo and Cass now. So I like walk up, like I even got Michelle, like I walked in the room the other day and she just said, how you doing or whatever. And I was like, what the hell? And she said at work, she texted me at like 2 a.m. or whatever. She put an IV in and said like, bada boom, you know, realest guy in the room. And I was like, what the hell? Like that's what I've done to this poor woman. Like she's at work, like reciting Enzo and Big Cass things when she puts an IV in somebody. Like, what have I done? Like. That I felt horrible that day. I was like, just don't do that. I'm sorry. Like, just don't do that anymore. But she loves Enzo and Cass. And my other friend, everybody loves Enzo and Cass. So I'm excited about watching them, too, because everybody's into them. But, yeah, I'm probably going to go about a 5 here. I don't know. The Fatal 4-Way, though, it's, you know. Meh. All right. AJ Styles, John Cena. This I'm into. This should be awesome.
Yeah.
And Gallows and Anderson are banned from ringside until a ref gets knocked down and then they come.
Well, they wouldn't mention that unless they're coming down.
Right,
so,
until, yeah.
You know, that's, you just hope it's not in.
Just to let you know, they're not coming down, wink, wink. They're banned from ringside.
You just hope it's not intrusive, like it wasn't really all that intrusive in the Roman Reigns matches. So,
yeah, yeah.
That's what you hope for. But I, you know, look, man, I got to give this a solid 8. Really looking forward to this.
It's Styles and Cena. I mean,
do you have any concern that they keep putting AJ Styles into feuds that he has to lose?
No, I don't care.
You just want to see him have good matches.
He just sees good matches against top guys. I'm cool with it. It's not like he's battling for, if he was battling for the U.S. title and losing, I would say, yeah, but no, he's in top tier feuds with guys that have been there forever. Like, I'm fine with that. Or, you know, and a guy like Roman Reigns, the star in the making. That's fine.
And
yeah,
just the
whatever.
WWE thing, you know, he was going to do some dues paying in terms of losing to people. So,
oh, sure.
He's going to lose. Look, he lost the Jericho feud. He lost the Reigns feud. And he's going to lose this feud. Eventually, he's got to win a feud, though. So, yeah. We'll see, but I just wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, I don't care right now. In the moment, I don't care because he's against the top guys. If he gets plumped down to the mid card and then he's losing feuds against guys like that, then yeah. Or if he gets in a feud with Bray Wyatt, then God help us all. All right, Money in the Bank ladder match. Sami Zayn, Cesaro, Chris Jericho, Dean Ambrose, Kevin Owens, and Alberto Del Rio.
I've kind of lost my – I think the Money in the Bank ladder matches have lost some appeal for me over the last couple of years. But I like the people involved in this one. And a big theme of this podcast has been motivation levels. And I think there's people in this one who are going to be motivated to put on a crazy, crazy show. So I'm more excited about this one than I've been for some of these in the past year or two. So I'm going to give this one a 7.
Maybe an 8, because you got Zayn, you got Cesaro, you got Ambrose, you got Owens. Those guys are going to bust their ass, do whatever they can. Jericho, he's smart in these ladder matches. He knows what he's doing. And then you have Alberto Del Rio, and, you know.
Yeah, he could get fucked. No one cares about him, but,
And then there's Alberto Del Rio. So, yeah, but no, I mean, you got all those guys. I mean, they're going to bust their ass. Sami Zayn's going to do some crazy spot, break it, you know, go through it. Cesaro, you got any match with Zayn, Cesaro, and Kevin Owens is a-okay with me, and then you add Dean Ambrose or whatever. Like, yeah, I think it's gonna be really good. It's gonna be, these guys are not gonna go out there and have a dud. Like, it's just not gonna happen. It's gonna be a spectacular match. So in that sense, I'm excited to see what they can do and what they do with it. So I'm gonna go an 8 because, yeah, how do you not get excited about that? And then you got the main event here. A little interesting, the Roman Reigns defending his title against Seth Rollins. I think it's way too soon for this. I don't like the way that Seth Rollins has been portrayed so far. I think he's way... I thought when you bring him back, as a babyface. You build up the injury rehab. You have him come back. You have him be that, you know, star that it was... He was budding. He was ready to go, and people just wanted to cheer for him, and now they finally have a reason to. But they didn't. They do whatever he's doing right now, and I don't know. I just have no feel for this match, even though I think it's going to be okay. I just don't know. I'm not into this main event feud right now. Sorry.
I think... let's poke some bears. How about that? Okay. I think that this will be another great Roman Reigns match where the other guy is clearly the better worker. How about that? I think that there's no way Rollins doesn't have a great match here coming back and all that. And he's going to want to make an impression. And I think that the AJ Styles Cena match is probably going to be a great match. So, you know, they're going to want, he's going to want to make sure that the, you know, he steals the show. Rollins is going to be motivated here. And I think they'll have a great match. And I think it'll be another example of a great Roman Reigns match where the other guy was the better worker. How about that? How about that?
You're going to get a lot of people angry here, but especially with Seth Rollins. But
we're having fun here.
Yeah.
Hey, look. There's no question AJ was the better of the two workers in those matches.
No, no question at all.
You know, so I think it's a good Let me put it to you this way, Rich. I think it's a good thing that Seth's injury was his knee and not his back, because he's got to carry 280 pounds on his back coming in this match.
Look at that. Look at that. Wow. That's going to get you in trouble there, that little quote right there. But I don't have a good feel for it. It's like when this thing should have been a huge deal. The fact that Rollins coming back, Reigns being what he is. And that's why we said, I think a lot of people, and I was on board for this, is that you do the Roman Reigns heel turn and you have Seth Rollins come back as a babyface. You have Rollins, or you have Reigns as the new authority guy or whatever. And this is back when the authority was still a thing. And I guess it's still kind of a thing, even though, but whatever. And then you have Rollins come back and he's the, hey, you guys replaced me with this guy or whatever. Oh, I go out for an injury. I rehab, I bust my ass to come back and you've replaced me. Like that story works for me. This, I don't know what the story is right now. And maybe it's just me not making that connection. Maybe people are into it. I'm not going to fault you for being into it, but for me, there's just nothing there. So I think it's going to be a solid match and I'm excited to see Rollins back in the ring. And I think him and Reigns can have decent chemistry. I can't go more than the five. I'm just not into this feud. I don't know why. Just not clicking with me. I don't know if it's clicking with you.
Yeah, I'm more into it than you are. Look, here's the problem. Rollins should be a face.
It's just weird. It's uneasy. It's like, I don't get the motivations.
Rollins should be a face. But the problem is he's just another guy who would be more over than the chosen one. So they can't do that. So they had to turn him heel. He's just another guy who would prove to be a better choice than Reigns. And they've already made their decision. So they're not going to go. They're all in on the Reigns train, despite the fact that Dean's drawn just as many fans on the road, highlighting headlining the B tour, which, you know.
Well, by the way, that was kind of funny that this week, that now house shows don't matter who's running them. They always matter when Daniel Bryan's main eventing them, they matter.
But when we're defending Roman Reigns, it doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter how many people go to house shows.
Daniel Bryan, well, no one's going to go see Daniel Bryan at a house show. Of course not. But Roman Reigns, oh, nobody goes to the house shows to see guys. They just go. It's
people just the house people crafting arguments to fit their narratives.
It's kind of funny. I do like that now, for the first time in like fucking 40 years, people don't go to house shows to watch certain guys. They just go.
No, they're just buying it for the brand. Even though history totally suggests otherwise forever.
Right. Daniel Bryan wasn't a great draw in the house shows, which is fine. Like John Cena was a bigger draw. People went to John Cena house shows. They didn't go to Daniel Bryan house shows. I'm okay with that. I've rationalized that. That makes sense to me. That's fine. But you can't have it both ways. You gotta be.
I mean, Dean Ambrose is pushed like a total geek. The other guy who never wins the big match. The other guy is pushed as this unstoppable force. He's been pushed from day one, and they're drawing the same numbers on the road. And the geek is headlining the B tour with the weaker shows. I mean, come on. Rollins comes back. You had a red hot baby face. Red hot opportunity, a new baby face. But you can't have anyone get in the way of the Reigns train. You can't. Choo choo. You can't get in the way, Rich. You got to push that Reigns train. Can't let anybody get
well, I think it's. Do I push it or does it go on its own? I assume it goes on its own.
Someone's pushing it.
Because you made the whistle, so I'm assuming that's like.
It definitely doesn't move on its own. It requires a big push.
It doesn't.
It requires a huge push, that train. It definitely doesn't move anywhere on its own. Unless it's powered by booze and people who don't give a shit, it doesn't move on its own.
It's powered by apathy.
It's powered by apathy. Exactly. So, I mean, Rollins should be a babyface. But, what I'm going to say. It's the end of the show. I'm having some fun. But
all right.
But I believe everything I'm saying. But
yes,
I'm just turning the screw a little. You know what I mean? but I do believe everything I'm saying. But yeah, I'm just prying the fucking toenail off a little. That's all.
All right. So before we get out of here, we got to talk TNA. Because they had quite the week.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. So we heard earlier in the week that they, out of nowhere, Billy Corgan bought minority stake in the company. Oh, cool. Billy Corgan pay. Hey, that's good. They have some financial backing. Well, we find out that they literally needed him to pay so that they could actually run their tapings because the production company who controlled the equipment being used, they demanded at least some of the money. This is in the Observer. Aerolox, which controlled the equipment being used, demanded at least some of the money owed or they wouldn't do the production and there would be no time to get new equipment and a new company. So essentially, they said, okay, we're sick of not being paid, can you pay us? And they said, Billy, hey buddy, what's up, man? Can we have some money? So we don't know if this is like a big stake. We don't know how much stake, but all we know is that they were in the 11th hour. The TNA CFO and COO, Dean Broadhead, I believe is his name, posted some Facebook thing that he was, calling people left and right and trying to find people and securing finances and all this stuff and barely got it under and how frustrated he is and all this sort of stuff. But essentially, the long story short, they needed an influx of cash at the last minute to actually get these tapings off the road. So, Joe, that's not good, right? That's bad.
One more quick point. Roman Reigns is Diesel. No, he is.
He is. You're right. It's not wrong.
Television ratings, the Raw ratings are all-time record lows. He can't outdraw Dean Ambrose headlining the A-show. He gets booed out of every building he's in. Okay? Do you know it's time? You know what? It's time to abort mission. You know what Roman Reigns is? Roman Reigns is a Tinder match where you get to the girl's house and she looks nothing like the pictures. And you say, you know what? I got to abort mission. And you know what you do, Rich? You don't plow forward. You turn around, you get back in your car.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you might.
I've plowed forward at times.
I was going to say.
I've plowed forward at times. I'm not going to lie. It depends how late it is. Okay? It depends how late it is. But what you do is, if it's a decent hour, you turn around and you abort mission. You get back in your car. You go home. And you
watch some K-Dojo.
And you live to swipe another day. Roman Reigns is a Tinder match that doesn't look like the pictures when you get to the house. That's what he is. They really need to abort mission. It's not going to happen. All the business indicators are shit, yet excuses are made for this guy. When are we going to admit that he's not over?
The rating stuff is bad. I mean, that's something that Brandon Howard was talking about.
It's not his fault.
No,
it's not his fault, Rich.
I mean, I do like this new idea that nobody can possibly be at fault for anything that goes wrong, even though it's a star-driven company. But, it's... See, the problem is you can't say it because then it's, they're sabotaging him on purpose.
Right. The guy with getting the strongest push in the company.
The guy that's main evented that will very soon be breaking Steve Austin's record for consecutive main events.
In pay-per-views. And the guy who is presented like a Superman and has been the most protected and pushed person on the roster since the day he debuted with the Shield. Okay? Have they made mistakes along the way? Has it been perfect? No.
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
But he's been the most protected and pushed harder than anybody on the roster since the day he debuted. So you could take that shit and flush it down.
Well, regardless, he's not busting through it. People aren't still saying, hey, look, regardless of the booking, I still love this guy. I'm still going to watch him. People are saying, I'm going to watch the NBA Finals. Fuck that. I'm not watching
him. He's a fucking come on.
Yeah.
Roman Reigns is a fucking shit bum. And if it was anybody else, they would have pulled the plug already. Can we be honest? There's no indicators that this guy's a success. Okay. He pushes a little bit of merch. He's not even the top merch seller, though. There's nothing that shows that this guy is catching on. And you couldn't push him any harder. And he blew a wet fart at WrestleMania in the biggest match of his life that no one's going to remember. Enough with this guy. Let's talk about TNA.
Let's do it. Yes, yeah. Enough of this crap. Let's talk about TNA.
So like you said, what a joke and a circus that TNA was this week.
Can you imagine working for this company?
What other company would have – this guy's the CEO.
CFO, COO, Dean Broadhead.
Chief Financial Officer. Okay.
He's a chief operating officer too. He's CFO and COO.
Okay.
So this which means about as much as me being the CEO of Voices of Wrestling.
That's fine, but he's a very high-ranking official in this company.
Yeah, right.
And he's spilling company dirt on social media. He's burying his own company on social media.
Let me read this thing. This is going to be a two-part episode anyway. So here, let me do this. So on Thursday and Friday, I logged over 80 business calls on my cell. Attorneys, accountants, mind you, this is on Facebook, by the way, and available for anybody to read. Attorneys, accountants, vendors, bankers, and employees. Maybe time to retire. But maybe not until everything is in its right place. To answer your why question, I had a 12-hour time frame to secure interim financing so that production trucks could roll. Lawyers, bankers, accountants, and owners. Some of them were out of the country, some of the West Coast, some on the East Coast. So that is the reason for all the calls. He's begging, please give me money. I don't care.
That's not even the worst part is he's telling people this publicly.
Right, that I'm begging people for $800 so we can
airing the dirty laundry. And it's amazing that their pay-per-view and their television tapings wouldn't even have gone off if Billy Corgan didn't save their ass. Which is astounding. I mean, it's just mind-blowing. And then they have their disaster for Impact.
Yeah, which is not their fault. To be fair, but
still, it's just these things. It's just this company.
This company. It's like this would only happen to like 1999 to 2000 WCW. You know what I mean?
You can't
like,
make up that happened to this company. It's just it's crazy, you know. And they finally get a little momentum with Lashley. Lashley cut the best promo of his career on that Impact, and we saw about,
it was in the one in slow-mo. Yeah,
yeah, we saw about 30 seconds of it, and then the usual people didn't stick around because they actually retained a decent chunk of, didn't they do like 200,000 viewers for.
Yeah, I think a lot. I think maybe it was a ploy on their behalf to try to get.
So they only
people were into it. Yeah,
they only lost about a third of their audience. I mean, 2/3 of their audience still watched it later. But they got a little momentum with Lashley. They got a little momentum with EC3. And it's just to the point where literally hours before these shows, they. But here's the weird thing, Rich. They don't have enough money to conduct their to just put on their shows, yet they're offering six-figure deals.
It doesn't make sense.
Where is the money coming from?
I don't know. And who would sign those? Like, in what would possess you to sign these?
It's like one of those NFL contracts where you know damn well the guy's not seeing, you know, 2/3 of the money. Where it's theoretical money that they never see. Like, who would sign a six-figure deal with TNA right now? When the odds are you're not going to see it. The company can shut down tomorrow. They have to find a way to tour India. I don't know how they're going to do this. Or they're going to lose their TV deal in India. They're at risk of losing their TV. And the TV deal in India is their biggest revenue producer. It's their biggest source of revenue right now. And if they can't pull off that tour, they could lose their TV deal in India. Then they're officially out of business. They will not survive without the India money.
No, we've always said that that's the tipping point there. The second India says, we're done, they're done.
So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of problems here. And you cannot have arguably the second or third most powerful person in the company just spilling all of this dirty laundry on social media like that. It's just, this is a fucking clown show. And we all knew that. But, Rich, we've known this for years, and it just keeps getting worse. It's a bigger fucking circus. What else can they do? But they consistently find ways to look worse. How does it happen?
I really didn't think it was going to be worse at like Dixie calling her bosses morons in an email because she tagged the wrong person, or like Russo like tagging Mike Johnson in an email. But like, you know what I mean? Like every single thing that happens, you're like, I can't. That's it. Like that is the pinnacle of dumb TNA. It will never get worse than
can't
that.
And Dixie then it's fire this guy? Why wouldn't she fire this man?
I don't know.
I mean, how does he have a job?
Because he's probably one of the only like responsible businessmen there. I don't know.
He's
even
not
despite
very responsible.
This,
look what he did.
But he's probably pissed off. He probably hates his job too. He probably hates his life.
If he doesn't do that, no one knows about this story.
True.
Or it's far more low key.
Yeah, or maybe somebody has it come out. But yeah, he made it a lot easier for for you to know that that was happening.
I mean, this guy's got to go. And you know, Arrow Lux apparently owns the TNA name and copyright, which is fucking, they don't even own the name TNA.
It's ridiculous. And then held them hostage because they want to get paid. And there was another story too of another vendor or something like that going, hey, you know, in January I did this stuff. Am I going to get paid anytime soon? And like I just can't admit, I can't fathom A, working in that company, B, doing anything because you're not going to get paid. You know what I mean? Like, or when you do get paid, it's going to come in an envelope on like the random day that you didn't think it was. Well, carry on.
And the biggest shame of it all is that Slammiversary was a pretty good show. I don't know if you saw any of it.
I haven't yet. I was actually planning on watching it the next few days. I was going to do the main event and like the top two matches. I thought for sure I was going to watch.
The main event is well worth your time. Excellent match. I had it at 4 stars. The tag team title match was an excellent match. The Hardy Brothers thing was the car crash that you thought it would be. Those are the only three matches I saw. And I liked all three of them. I haven't watched the first half of the show yet. But definitely, and I was told that everyone's saying the X Division match was good. So that's 4 good matches. Now, from what I understand, the rest of it was absolute dog shit. But if you're going to get 4 good matches and you know that coming in and you can cherry pick them if you're watching it after the fact, there's nothing wrong with that. And the main event was excellent. Everyone should go watch the main event. It was a very intelligently worked match too. Galloway hit the whatever he calls his kick, the Claymore kick, I think he calls it. He hit that Claymore kick at the opening bell and then completely dominated the first, 85% of the match. And then, Lashley like threw him through a table to the outside and then choked him out. But it was a very interesting story because Galloway dominated the entire match. He just couldn't put Lashley away. And they didn't do the tropes that you were afraid of.
Okay, good.
They didn't do
good.
The constant 10 counts with two guys laying on their back. They didn't do any of that. It was just Galloway kicking the shit out of Bobby Lashley. And then Bobby Lashley just absorbing the beating. And then again, Rich, the heel just winning clean and being the better man, which I love. So, and of course, Lashley signed a new contract and Galloway has not yet. So that kind of explains the title change, you know, to some extent. So there's that too. Bobby Lashley clearly enjoys working for that company.
Yeah, hey, go for it, dude. They need someone. They need someone that's going to drive the ship because there was alluding, you know, of course, in the Observer, Dave mentioned that there's a few guys that they've been trying to give big money to that are probably going to take lesser deals. We probably know a few of those names. They'll probably come out pretty soon. But it's there's been a bunch of stuff. It's just like, yeah, I just cannot fathom. Like, I'm glad Lashley enjoys it, but I couldn't fathom relying my family on that company. You know what I mean?
Well,
like, there are guys there.
He makes money in other ways, and it's an easy job because how many dates do you work a year?
Oh yeah. And I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about those other guys in there. There's guys in that roster that depend on that check coming, and that's a big deal to them. I would do whatever I can to just say, you know what, guys? Hey, no hard feelings, but I can't do this. Like, it's just it's unfathomable the what goes on in this. Because it's going to come the time where they're just going to straight up not, I don't know. They just always find a way to survive. Like, I'm always assuming there's just going to be one day where they just put a sign up and then the thing just goes away and it disappears and nobody ever knows anything about it. And it's like, oh yeah, but they just don't, they just always survive somehow. And it's, but they always get in these situations. It's so weird, but this was just not a great week for them at all. And it continues to just, anytime they get a little bit of momentum, they're the most unlucky company in the world, but they also put themselves in the position to be this unlucky all the time too. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's conflicting in that way. Cause Garrett Kidney, of course, our fantastic TNA reviewer was saying, oh, everybody's, you know, rolling their eyes at TNA when this was Pop TV's fault, this thing that happened, but it's just like, it's so TNA though. Right. Like, even if it's not their fault, it's like, of course this would happen to TNA. Like, it wouldn't happen to any other wrestling company. The show would just show fucking commercials for 2 hours or whatever. Only TNA would that be a problem. Only would there be a thunderstorm at TNA's TV station or whatever that prevents them from putting it. Only them. Nobody else would have this happen.
How many high-ranking office officials have to behave like children, though? Whether it's, Vince Russo attaching the wrong people to emails or Dixie Carter calling television executives idiots, or this guy posting this stuff on social media. And there's other examples over the years. I mean, you know, it's they don't conduct themselves like a professional company either. And that's actually a point Dave Meltzer has made over the years. Like, who would want to do business with these people? I'll tell you who. Shitty entities like Pop TV. That's who.
Yeah, well, I mean, imagine being like an advertiser or like a merchandiser or a building or what,
yes,
you know what I mean?
Yes,
like,
I can't imagine, because they're only paying TNA $360 for 30-second ads. This tells you all you need to know. And
that's really bad. I mean, when you look at like ad rates that like, you know, us that we get, like it's really.
Wait,
like,
listen, we are legitimately on their fucking heels.
It's not good.
Like, this fucking podcast.
This we're us idiots.
This podcast almost is very close to drawing the same
like, really not far, yeah.
As TNA wrestling on national TV on SEC wrestling.
That's been around for like 10 years on national TV with the big stars.
I mean, think about let that sink in. It's pathetic.
Oh, God, that's just.
they can't get the mattress ad we had earlier in the show.
They can't get Casper mattress. That's Casper.com/VOW. Promo code VOW, by the way. 50% off. $50 off. Not 50% off. Do not take 50% off your mattress. That would be not good. $50
off. $50 off a mattress. Good deal. They can't get fancy underwear Mack Weldon.
No.
They get $360 television ads for a national television show. I mean, in reality, this company shouldn't exist. Dixie Carter is just stubborn. That's really what it comes down. Anyone else would have thrown in the towel a long time ago. Just an embarrassing, surreal, depressing, yet totally believable week for TNA. All at the same time.
And it's been a good week. They've had a good week other than all this stuff. Like, in ring, it's been great. Story, good.
They had a pay-per-view that delivered, for the most part.
It had a good build. Had buzz. People were excited about it. People were watching it.
It had legitimate TNA level buzz. For TNA, it had good buzz.
Yeah,
Matt Hardy is doing yeoman's work, gaining buzz. What he's doing is working. As ridiculous as it is, as wrestle crap as it is, for TNA, it's good buzz for them. I really felt like they had some momentum on their level going into that pay-per-view. And then I really felt like that was an important impact for them. And then something legitimately out of their control happens. And that's just bad luck, but I mean, it's just that's this company that's just they're cursed.
TNA. Well, I'm going to miss them when they're gone, if they ever die. Because we always have, like, every few months we have these segments where we just talk about them. I just love them.
I know.
We bring up stuff. Like, we just bring up, oh, Dixie Carter sent an email and called them all idiots. Didn't know that they were CC'd. Like, I'm going to miss that. Like, you're not going to get that from any other company. We don't get that from anybody else. But they're the gift that just keeps on giving. So,
I know we have a lot of wrestling always to watch. You really should watch.
I will.
The Lashley-Galloway main event from Slammiversary.
If it's trope-free, if it's free of those, then yeah, I will absolutely go.
I think you'll really like it. I thought it was a very unique story.
All right, Joe, anything else?
No.
Okay, it has gotten much hotter in this room. Remember how I said 70 degrees? I believe it's now 90, and I'm sweating it profusely. Again, I'll mention that this episode was sponsored by Casper Mattress. Casper.com/VOW, promo code VOW, and you save 50% off your next, or $50 off. I don't keep saying 50%. $50 off your next mattress purchase. And of course, as you mentioned at the top of the show, you get that 100-night free trial. If you don't like it, they'll take it back for them free. So Casper.com/VOW, promo code VOW. You save $50 off your next mattress purchase. Joe, I will see you later.
Rich.
What?
One thought to ponder before you end it.
Oh, no. Let me go.
Which number is higher? The number of people who will listen to this podcast or the number of buys for Slammiversary?
Oh, no, unquestioned this.
Is that easy, huh?
I think so, isn't it?
I think I might agree.
I think I would agree. I don't know if it's particularly close. What did we say the last TNA pay-per-view?
We're not really getting numbers anymore, but didn't Dave say that they were well? Well, look, he said Ring of Honor was number two, and don't they do about 10,000? Number two on pay-per-view, and they do about 10,000, and they're the number two right now, according to last week's Observer. And I think last year or whatever, when they had Bound for Glory or whatever it was on pay-per-view, didn't Dave say it was sub 5,000? I could be wrong about that.
If so, then yes, we will beat it. So, yeah, I'm trying to see here. I can't find it. All I can find out is they had 17,000 in 2013 for Bound for Glory, which
17,000.
I'm going. So that's not even that far. Like, yeah, I'm sure it's gone down much since then. Let's see.
Well, the question for you to ponder and for the listeners to ponder, I would like people's feedback. Only we know our numbers, though, so it's kind of unfair. Right. But it's like I really wonder which number is higher. It's a fair question.
That's not out of the realm of possibility that we do significantly better than what they do on pay-per-view, which is amazing. So any TNA advertisers that want to advertise with us, we will accept similar rates.
Hey,
we'll
take your $364.
Yeah, that will work for us. We don't have to pay a legion of people, but that'll work if you could do that for us. So that'd be great. So anyway, again, for Joe Lanza, I'm Rich Creation. We'll see you next time on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast. Take care. Stick it in.